Well, thanks for letting us come in.
I'm sorry, may I interject one more thing? And they're going to send us the PowerPoint, so if you're thinking, oh, I need to take a lot of notes, I probably won't have to. Go ahead.
We'll send you all these notes. And we appreciate you letting us come in and talk to you about our department today. Baruch is going to be joining us. He just emailed he's got a doctor's appointment across town, so he'll be running in late. But what we wanted to do is kind of go over three different things. One is our curriculum overview, just to let you know what we do very broadly, and then kind of get into the specifics of some of those degree components that we have. And then finally, put some closure on it with some of our thoughts of things in music ed that, things that we're very happy with, things that we feel like we'd like to change up a little bit, and we'll end with that. So first of all, I want to let you know that we have a music education handbook, and you all are welcome to get a copy of it if you have any interest in it. It is online, and I can point you to the correct spot. But we've got one for music education for senior student teaching, both two different handbooks that spell out a lot of complexities in our degree. One of the first things that you should know about our program is we're very heavily tracked. Students can be a vocal concentration, or a keyboard, or a guitar, or winds, or a percussion, or a strings concentration. So we have many different concentrations within the music education degree, and all of those are similar in many ways, but then they also do have some differences in their curriculum, as opposed to some of our colleagues around the country who are less heavily tracked. Okay, a Bachelor in Music Ed at many of our peer institutions is fewer tracks. So you might see a winds and percussion track and a strings track. Or you may just see an instrumental track that combines both of them. But what you see many times is an instrumental track, choral track, and a general music track. So you can see that we've got a few more. Now, I think this is one thing that our department is talking about right now. It currently, to emphasize in general music, if I want to come in and I want to be an elementary general music educator or just a general music educator, then I have to major in voice. I have to be a vocal track music education major and take the vocal general music track. So that's something that's different about our institution and one that the department is talking about right now. That you ought to be able to come in as a trumpet player and choose to be a general music teacher. And right now we don't have that option. You can only be a general music teacher if you are a voice specialist. You've auditioned on voice. So I personally believe that's a bit problematic. We're discussing it right now in our department.
Chad, can we jump back there real quick?
Yep.
So we have all of these, but for the most part, we have three tracks, though. Do you want to mention that, or?
Go ahead.
So even though we have all of these, for the most part, our keyboard, for the most part, we have winds and percussion as a track, strings as a track, and then what we call vocal general music as a track. So we actually have three dominant tracks, and typically what happens are these two fold into the vocal, both the keyboard and the guitar fold into the vocal track. So even though they're a guitar major, they end up having a lot more vocal requirements because, again, that's how we combine them here. And part of the issue that Chad is talking about is what do you do with these students who maybe aren't necessarily a vocal major but might want to be a general music person. So for the most part, we streamline those three. You can think of those three tracks as our broad tracks with exceptions.
And it does present problems when we try to squash keyboard and guitar players into a vocal track. You know, you can imagine that that's not their primary instrument, and it can create and has created some problems. So to compare the straight music education and the performance, the 4.5 degree, there are many similarities. The music education requirements are the same. The core requirements are the same between both degrees. 4.5 takes 4 credit lessons. And they do more recitals, and they have fewer electives. So that's the main difference between the straight music ed and the 4.5.
Thank you.
And they add chamber music in there. That's the one thing that's not in there.
And I remember being on curriculum committee, and there was some discussion about what is a credit lesson versus a, you know, one credit lesson versus two credit lesson, and that I'm not exactly sure about.
We are so sorry. We teach till 12:05.
No, not a problem.
It
we
was
were forewarned.
Oh, okay.
You missed all the theory jokes.
We got to start over.
So, the real quick difference between the two programs there. In general education requirements, we have 9 credits that our students have to take outside of Wayland. And these are in part largely dictated by state licensing requirements. And so you can see educational psychology, social and cultural foundations, educating students with special needs, and these are all 3 fairly hefty classes that they take outside of Wayland that packs our degree even tighter. But it's very important. Then they take an introductory sequence in their first 2 years, and I'm going to let James talk about that in depth in a moment. There are mandated education workshops that our majors have to complete for no credit. And these aren't extensive. They're, 1-2 hour workshops that they have to attend, but they do go on the transcripts, and they are mandated for licensure in New York State. And you can see they're all good things.
Note anything with EDC, that means any education major on campus has to do this, because they're primarily a New York State requirement. So that's why they're housed over in the EDUC department versus here in the music department.
Right. So math education people are
doesn't matter. They're mixed in with all those right. those degree tracks.
Yeah. Yep. And then we've got pedagogy courses as they start getting into their junior year and sophomore junior year. So you can see music ed for children, contemporary ensembles, teaching instrumental music, or the vocal general equivalent. Wind instrument pedagogy, lab band, these are really the core of the pedagogy courses that they take. Conducting courses, 2 semesters of conducting. And then they take all their secondary instruments. So that's where, you know, if I want to go out and become a band director, I need to learn, I'm a trumpet player, I also need to learn how to play and teach the flute and the clarinet and et cetera. So, you know, keyboard, musicianship, class, voice, percussion, strings. They take individual secondary, so you take a semester of trumpet or a block of trumpet. You know. classroom instruments, you know, for teaching small kids. And then for the vocalists and the string majors, they take a semester of woodwinds and a semester of brass, so they're kind of all lumped together, whereas the band students take individual semester-long courses on each instrument.
What are individual secondary instruments?
So that would be, I'm a trumpet player, so I'm going to take class trombone, class horn, class clarinet, class flute.
Oh. So those are all separate classes you're taking?
Yeah. Yes.
And in the strings world, it would be if you're a violinist, you would take class viola, class cello, class double bass. Yep. And then they would take class brass, class woodwinds. They would take all the other instruments clumped together. And the band kids would take class strings. That would be a clumped together class for the band and vocal kids.
So the track you're in, you get individual classes on each instrument, and then you get a big clumped class for the others.
And they're all spelled out. Mm-hmm. They're in charts. You're a
set. I've oriented. Yeah. I've done orientation. So.
Yeah.
It is a tightly packed curriculum, so it's don't want to get out of sequence. student teaching. So they have a year of what we call junior student teaching, and this is where they go out into the schools and teach elementary age students. And that is another requirement of you have to have a certain number of hours and days of student teaching. And we fulfill currently part of that requirement within junior student teaching and part of the requirement in senior student teaching. Mm-hmm. We are currently talking in our department about fulfilling all of that requirement in senior student teaching so that the junior student teaching can just be an enrichment experience. We can have more flexibility, perhaps, in how we handle junior student teaching. The fact is we're only a week away from being able to fulfill the entire state requirement in senior student teaching. So if we can do that, then we can open up a lot of flexibility in junior student teaching.
This is because the state constantly changes wording. And so we're not looking for loopholes, but things can shift according to their wording. And they just reworded things last year. And so there's it constantly changes on us.
Well, may I ask a question about that? Will they then realize the error of their rewording and reword it back?
Yes.
So we could change, and then you'd have to change back.
It happens all the time. They change their wording every year.
Yeah, so.
And there's never any grandfathering, so it's always like you have to respond.
You have to do this right away.
New York is particularly bad about that. They fly the plane before they build it in New York. And then the senior student teaching is currently a block course. At many of our institutions, it's a semester-long course. So part of that is because we have so many music education majors in Ithaca. There are so few schools, relatively, that we have to use a co-op twice for two placements in a semester. That's why we are doing block. Plus, we've also said in the past, well, they get a year-long of junior student teaching, and that helps defray the downside of only having a block of senior student teaching. There's some transition points that our students go through, and at various points in their degree program, and don't try and read all this. It's very long. It's many pages. But this is just a picture of one part of that. You know, transition points such as C+ requirement in certain courses, field work requirements. They have to observe for 100 hours. That's observe in the schools for 100 hours. That's another state thing. So we have many different transition points where a student needs to get through in order to get to the next level in music ed and complete the degree.
You can think of those primarily at the end of the sophomore, junior, and senior years. Three major dates.
So that was a general overview of our curriculum. We'd like to talk a little bit more in depth about some of the specifics of our curriculum that is specific to music education, including the introductory sequence, secondary instrument courses, pedagogy, electives, all of these things right up here. So, James?
Great. So I get the pleasure of working the intro sequence, which took a long time for me to get used to. Just to give you an idea of numbers in the intro sequence, freshman class this year we had 94. Sophomore class, currently, we're usually right around 60s to 70, so 94 is a big class for us. I've only ever had one in the 90s before. Usually by the junior year, we're in the 50s to 60s, and senior year, right, usually maintained by that. So if we shed students, it's typically that freshman, sophomore year. The freshman numbers are also inflated because we have transfer students and that type of thing that we count as freshmen, even though they'll complete everything in a year. The intro sequence is our way of meeting the New York State requirements before they work with children. So New York State requires that they have observations, that they go through criminal background, that they have a New York State teach account. They have all of these points that they have to meet before we can legally put them in front of children and allow them to work with children. Now, think about it. At other institutions, if they wait till the senior year for a student to senior student teach, they have 3.5 years or 3 years to complete those. Since we do junior student teaching, we crunch it down into 2 years so that we can then legally put them in front of children the junior year. The way this sequence is worked out is it's a double stuffed Oreo cookie is how I like to think about it. The first and the last semesters are similar, as are the middle two.
Okay.
We have we meet for a block the first semester, and we meet for a block the last semester. And in between, we meet maybe two times. So we meet seven times, two times, two times, seven times. What they do during the sequence is, as you can see the topics, we have a little bit of the topics going on, but primarily what they're doing is they're trying to meet the New York State requirements of observing a minimum of 100 hours of children being taught. That is, it doesn't matter what degree you're in New York State, if you're an education major, you have to do 100 hours of observation. 15 of those have to be of special needs. children. So in this course sequence, in the intro, I introduce them, I kind of get them jazzed about, you know, music ed, but we talk about all the ins and the outs and how they track all these hours, and I'm sure you've probably seen students observing the Suzuki program in the mornings on Saturdays, and you'll see them flock to concerts. But any time a child is being taught through age 18, they can count that as an observation. Now, I work with them on not focusing only in one area. I know you think you want to be a high school choir teacher, but you also need to go see marching band. What does that look like? You've never been to a marching band, if you've never been to a beginning strings class. So we talk about diversifying those. But that's on their shoulders to collect those. Then I'm just the gate to make sure that they actually meet that requirement. They are all recorded online, and that is housed in the education department. They actually have a full-time person who will go through and tell me, this student said that they were out of school for 9 hours. Can a student be able to, you know, and they'll question me on the student hours a lot of times. So the students have to be very detailed on how they collect these hours and record them, and they have to get teacher signatures and email addresses, and they report the demographics of the school. Again, this is all New York State required stuff. So it's not just music ed, it's not just Ithaca College. This is across the state. So in this sequence, in essence, what I do is the first semester when they walk in the fall, they do 10 hours of observation. That's what I require for them to pass the class. I require them at the end of their... So then, basically, I let them go in December. The following December, we require them to be to 85 hours. So they have a full year. They have the summer. They have the spring break. They have fall break. They have winter break. They have an entire 12 months to get to 85 hours. And then during current topics, they finish the last 15. Why 15 hours at the end? If you notice back before the EDUC class, Educating Students with Special Needs, that course has 15 hours of special needs observations embedded into it. So if a student takes that class before the end of their sophomore year, they can double dip those hours. It'll count both for our class and their class, and it meets that 15 special need hours that they need to have by New York State law anyway. So that would be a class that I always highly recommend that the freshmen or sophomores have before the end of their sophomore year. Otherwise, they'll be doing extra hours if they take that after their sophomore year. So that's a place where there are certain classes in our sequence that we try to get them to take in line, and that would be an instance of that. The only other work that they do in this, I don't require them to buy any textbooks. They do some readings. They do one observation in each of these, and it's an online observation. And I just require them to write 2 or 3 pages, basically, on one observation. Potsdam does a review for every single observation they do. So I always tell my students, it used to be 40, by the way, they used to do 10 a semester. So we're down to only 4 that they do. And the other big thing that the sophomores are currently doing right now is they have to open a New York State Teach account and be fingerprinted. And they have to pass a criminal background clearance, and they have to show proof of that. And that is due also, right now, it's actually due on Monday, yesterday. So this is what I track, and I have about 170 students. I don't tell them where to go. I can offer some ideas, but there are handouts and things that I post outside my office. But I am not there. I can't do that for them. I just help maintain records and make sure that they actually get to that by the time we pass them on to the junior year. I'm basically the gatekeeper, if you want to think about it that way. Questions over, or should we just move on and then come to questions later? The next thing that we have here, okay, so there you see they have the 100 hours, they have the 15 are special needs. We try to get them in a variety of different places, and then they meet 7 times, that double stuff Oreo cookie. The middle 2 times, they only meet once or twice, the middle 2 classes. Great.
So, yeah, our secondary instruments, Dan put this slide together, and by the way, he couldn't be here today. His son is having a procedure in New York City, but he sends his best. And we can send you this PowerPoint if you like. So for the secondary instruments, one thing that we get a lot of across the country is, wow, you guys do secondary instruments well. So that's something that we feel good about. The individual classes are dedicated, you know, like I mentioned, there's a block or a semester course for each individual instrument, which we really like. They are typically taught by a graduate assistant, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. And they should, theoretically, involve a mix of being able to play the instruments and being able to teach the instruments. And then, of course, the woodwinds and woodwinds class and brass class for strings, vocal majors, strings class for the band students and the vocal majors. And then everybody takes keyboard musicianship. Brooke, do you want to talk about the pedagogy classes for the vocal students?
So the teaching vocal genre music is linked with the Immaculate Conception Lab School, which has been a partnership with Ithaca College for over 50 years. So we're very proud of that. The students actually get real class situations with students who are somewhat motivated, not motivated, and highly motivated. So they get a real live situation in terms of teaching different types of students. So we normally have... Wow, at the heyday, we had over 20 students in that program at one time, but now we have 12, so we're a little bit down, I think, because of that one year that the classes were not as big, but we're coming up next year to about 17 students. So we try and give, they teach twice a week off campus at the Immaculate Conception School, which is about 10 minutes down the road here. They teach 20-minute classes. Normally, for the first semester, they'll do, if they have a lower grade, pre-K through first or second grade, they move up to the higher grade, third, fourth, and fifth, sixth. The lab school is from pre-K to sixth grade, so the upper grades tend not to have as many numbers, but pre-K this year have actually doubled in size from the previous year. So they had like 36 students enrolled in that. And we actually broke those classes in smaller sections so our students could have a better experience. General and choral music in the secondary school, that's that all the vocal general people have to take, and that's with Susan Avery, and really dealing with more of the secondary school, how to deal with middle school and high school students. Student teaching and rehearsal lab, vocal choral. A few years ago, some of the students mentioned that they wanted more experience conducting and doing these types of things. So we instituted this lab situation where the second half of the semester that they go in and actually work with the, this year was Derek Fox, whoever's going to be teaching that class next year. But we're kind of looking at that too and see if we can get more of an elementary component in that also. So we're in discussions about that.
And the junior student teaching for all tracks is little kids, elementary school and early middle school, and then senior student teaching is at the high school level. So they get a mix of all age levels, and actually pre-K in the lab school.
And then we also have a Head Start. Those students come to campus, which I'm teaching this year, but our students get an opportunity to observe and to assist. They come in and actually work with those students who are in a Head Start. And I may want to also mention, too, that right now I think it's if a pianist is in the music education sequence, they have an opportunity to come over to the vocal side. But and also with the guitar majors.
We actually touched base on that when you came in, is that the guitarists and the pianists kind of get tracked into the vocal. On the band side or the wind instrument side, they take wind instrument pedagogy, and that is linked directly to their junior student teaching out in the schools. It's meant to really complement what they're doing out in the schools with little kids. Teaching instrumental music, also a pedagogy type course, gets more into philosophy, assessment, curriculum, writing, administrative type things. Student teaching and rehearsal lab, that's what Ruth was saying, where it's much more focused on rehearsing a group. So that's the winds and percussion pedagogy courses.
On the string side, just real quick note about, nothing really. So I'll just leave it. There you go. It's basically the same as the other two. We just have some string, obviously string-specific stuff. So.
Another pedagogy course that we instituted about 5 or 6 years ago, we're very happy about, is called Contemporary Ensembles in Music Education. And that's based on the way that informally trained musicians learn. So people that just learned to play guitar and be in a rock band, how did they acquire those skills? You know, there's some great musicians out there. How did they learn those, if not in the schools? And so we like to put our students in that position of, can you learn in the same way that an informally prepared musician have learned, without a teacher, without notation, on an instrument that is foreign to you, that you've never played before, in a popular music style, probably, writing your own music, doing covers of music, no teacher leading the ensemble. And the sophomores, when we first started this, just panicked a few years ago, and it was really a tough sell. And now it's just not a tough sell at all. They love it. It's a great experience for them. And our hope is that they come out of this seeing music teaching more broadly than just what is currently being done in schools. But it's a much bigger profession than that. You can see they compose, arrange, copy recordings. We don't let them use notation. They run their own rehearsals. They choose their instruments. They choose their style of music. It has a digital music component. So, a rich experience.
They compose. Can I ask? They compose and arrange without notation. So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We ask for them not to use any. They can listen. They can watch YouTube videos. They can.
So
the whole point.
Like you sing this now. Is that
yeah.
What
yeah. Yeah. And we'll walk around. We'll facilitate. We'll walk around and say, hey, you know, like, why don't you?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to hear your voice with the bass drum going so often.
Yeah.
Why don't, you know, or why don't you add a modulation in there? And, you know, yeah.
So by no notation, do you also mean no lead sheet?
They can use lead
chord symbols scribbled
out
on a napkin, that
they
kind of thing.
That, yeah.
So that kind of stuff, sure, which happens in
and
garage
we don't dictate.
Band.
We're not police. We just say we want to encourage you to do something by ear.
Yeah.
We tell them, look, the easy thing would be to go and get some, you know, purchase sheet music for this and just learn it real quick. And, you know, try not to do that. Try and copy it by ear. Try and YouTube it, Google it, stuff like that.
Yep. I think also one of the things that we also discussed with this new class was, you know, the band, orchestra, and choral programs will always be there. And that's, in any typical high school situation, middle school, that's about 10% of the population. But when you get into the other 90% or 85% of the student population, this is where this is going to make a big difference. And being able, for those students to have been exposed to this and been able to facilitate these kinds of things, I mean, we think is very, very important in the 21st century.
Reaching out to the other 80%, yeah.
So I have a question about this, and I want to delay your presentation now. I can either ask it now or come back to it. Well, there's such a thing called Nashville chord symbols. Y'all know about what that means? It's what passes for now contemporary music scene, pop music, which is how it's Nashville chord chart. And, you know, there are some contemporary music theory, music fundamentals books published now that contain Nashville chord charts, lead sheets, as you would see in a recording studio in Nashville. Does that come into this at all? Should we be preparing our students for that? Because that's sort of what's...
Well, I actually think the thing is that we want them to experience things that we specifically have not prepared them for.
Wow, okay. Wow, cool.
Specifically. So if they've encountered it, we'd like them to not use it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I should have mentioned, I'm here. By the way, our students, their lab school is with Julie Carr. We're actually in one of the best situations in the country, I think. Julie Carr has 40 years of public school teaching experience. So she actually retired from this public school 7 years ago and started a string program at a Catholic school in Cortland. And that's where our students go. So it's pre-K through 6th grade, very similar to what happens. And they go 2 days a week. And they actually teach young children one-on-one, or pull-out lessons, as we call it. And so that, I'd forgotten to mention that when we're there, but that's the situation that our string kids, and it's truly, that's our major selling point, by the way. When our students come to campus to interview, I walk around and meet parents. Do you know about our junior student teaching program? What? What's that? And then that is like our meat and taters, and Julie's always there with us. And so I say, you get to work with this person with 40 plus years of teaching experience, grading all of your lesson plans, all your emails you'll be sending to parents. And so we actually have a
beautiful, beautiful situation with that. I love working with her. So.
And similar in the band world, they go out to Boynton Middle School, DeWitt Middle School, all around Groton. And they're working with kids in the schools one-on-one or in small group lessons for the whole year. They're teaching these kids how to play the instrument from day one. And so they get to follow them for the whole year and work with the co-op teacher there also.
Is that nationally a different between instrumentalists and vocalists? Because I noticed that our instrumental kids are teaching one-on-one lessons, but the vocal ones are more classroom.
That's a New York thing.
Yeah.
Pull-out lessons are not, that's homogeneous teaching versus heterogeneous teaching are the terms that we throw out.
It's state-specific.
Yeah, and so what we do is we focus on, in the junior student teaching, for the most part, we focus on pull-out lesson. And in the senior student teaching, we focus more on the large ensemble. And that's actually where these lab classes came in. The reason we started these rehearsal lab classes was partially to get them to learn. We don't have a string orchestra here at Ithaca College. So our students that are string music ed majors aren't playing the rep that they're going out and potentially teaching. So I actually use and I try to get them at least to learn some of the string orchestra rep in that lab class. So that's a very good question. But we talked specifically about large ensemble rehearsal and differences between a pull-out lesson.
And we are looking at that to see if we can expand the general music experience for the instrumentalists.
Yeah.
Because we feel like, some of us feel like that's a very important part. And also that may be a deficit in our program.
And Deb, to kind of pick up on what you said, in New York, there's this wonderful thing called pull-out lessons where kids actually come out for lessons during the school day with the band director. It really doesn't exist anywhere outside of the north pockets of the Northeast. So we do that at Ithaca College. If we were in Iowa or something, they would have no idea why. we would be doing that. You can see the electives that our students, these are some of the electives that our students can choose from in music education. Excuse me. Marching band, jazz pedagogy, a cappella, smart board technology, technology, curriculum assessment, flipped classrooms, emerging practices. So we try to offer a fresh set of electives. For
the campus ensembles, a lot of them will take on a secondary instrument. There's another one, chamber music. A lot of them will sub in chamber music for their music electives.
As we mentioned, the junior student teaching is... if there's one thing that's unanimous in our department, it is our feeling that our junior student teaching program is one of the strongest components of what makes our curriculum strong, if that makes sense. Our whole department really values the junior student teaching experience. That's not to say that we can't change it or tweak it. Absolutely, we can and should. But that experience, we feel, is not only a major selling point for an Ithaca College music education degree, but it's also the thing that makes our students such strong teachers when they get out in the field. Really, I've not heard of any other program in the country that has a year-long student teaching program at the junior year where students go out and teach every week with a co-op teacher, with a college faculty member, watching, videoing, talking about their teaching, looking at their lesson plans. I mean, it's really
in the classroom with the posters and the kids walking by outside and kids showing up late for lessons. And I mean, there's almost nothing like it.
No, most other programs have that in the senior year. It's only a semester, and you don't have the college faculty member there. So it's just a very big difference. But plus, we have senior student teaching, so... feel very, very fortunate, very good about our junior student teaching. Our proficiency exams are another thing that we're very, very positive about. And that is where students, after they've taken their secondary instruments, they come and they perform a piece at a grade level 4 on each of those instruments for a faculty member. And they do that in block 3 of their junior year. It is one reason why they are all stressed out in block 3 of the junior year. But when they pass those proficiencies, they play those secondary instruments better than many students from around the country. It's one thing that we constantly hear about from teachers around the state and around the Northeast that, your grads really play those secondaries well. And so we're very, very happy about the proficiency exams in that year. Prerequisites to student teach, these are them.
on the previous, failure to pass proficiency delays their...
Yep, and so sometimes if they fail to pass a proficiency, we don't let them go senior student teach until the next year.
Does that delay graduation?
It could, or if they're a foreign, or we could just put them in a different block. We could put them in block four of the next year and have them do the proficiency just before they go out. So we can mitigate that sometimes.
What percentage of students pass on the first time around?
Most.
About 95%.
Yeah.
I mean, in my area, I mean,
we have various components in that proficiency. Yeah. They play, they have to sight read, and they will also talk a little bit about the pedagogy of the instrument. So if they fail one of those, we'll bring them back in just for that one section.
Okay.
Most kids pass block three. Almost all of them pass during block three. If they have to go back and do a section included, very few of them go beyond block three.
We've kind of established a culture of don't come in until you're going to nail it.
Yep.
And so I think it's gotten better over the years. In order to pass student teaching, they have to pass it with a C+. They are evaluated on a rubric by their co-op teacher and by their supervising teacher, and they have to meet all requirements in all of the areas. They have to meet all the professional dispositions, and that is something where, as you know, shows up on time, responds appropriately in emails, dresses appropriately, all of the non-teaching type things that are so important to being a successful professional. And they are evaluated on those several times. And then they have to submit to EdTPA. Okay, that is the new test, teacher certification test, or it's one of them, that they have to pass in order to get their license. And so they complete that. That's where they're videoing their teaching, they're reflecting on it, they're submitting lesson plans, assessments, things like this. It's a portfolio that they submit, and it's one component to becoming licensed that they do in their senior student teaching.
Which is mandated by New York State, since they took from the top, Race to the Top money, the $700 million that they took in 2012. The government said, you have to do this.
So. Professional dispositions, talked about them a little bit. Let me show you what they are. Professional responsibility, collaboration and communication, reflective practice, commitment to affirming all students. So these are the things, the dispositions that we want our teachers going out into the field with. And we rate them on these things. And students can get held back in the program if they are not meeting these dispositions. We go through every student every year and determine whether they are meeting.
And please take those emails seriously. So if you get an email asking about a student to fill that out, we're looking for threads or common threads. Normally there's been a couple professors that have said, this student never turns anything in on time, even though they're passing. Well, that's something we want to know, because if they're going to be working with principals and co-op teachers, we need to be able to pinpoint that. So when we send that email out, you're not getting the student in trouble, you're just helping us track them. And a lot of times your comments may not make it on if you're the only one that mentions it, but it's something that the chair can talk to the student about before we send them out to work with professionals.
What happens is we look for threads, and then we draw up a contract with the student, and you must meet X, Y, and Z in order to continue. That contract goes into effect. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, just in kind of recap of what you saw there, the freshman sophomore years, they're just doing kind of a lot of these general requirements the state requires, their observation, doing these courses in the EDUC department. The junior year is kind of the oh year, right? It's the that's the first time that they teach. That's when the rubber hits the ground. I say they never know more than the end of their sophomore year. That's when you know the most in life, because you have all this theory, you know what you're going to do in your class, but you haven't ever done anything. Then the junior year, but that's really, really controlled. So they still don't quite, but that's the first year. They're writing lesson plans. They're failing in front of their kids, and it's very hard for them. It's the very first step that they take in true teaching. On top of that, they have proficiencies, and they have everything else that goes on. So for me, it's not like this gradual crescendo that class one leads to class two, leads to class three. It's kind of like they have a bunch of stuff. Then they have this year where it just shoots off the charts. Yeah. Then it drops back because their senior year, they only have one more bump, which is that senior student teaching. So for me, there's five blocks that are just insane for them, junior year and the senior student teaching. But the senior student teaching is very manageable, because they're off campus and they don't have to worry about anything else. It's really that junior year when they're trying to juggle everything. And if they're 4.5, They also throw in a recital on top of that, and the lessons kind of see as this kind of natural crescendo, and it's very stressful for them. So that's why that junior year for us is so crucial.
That's killer.
Yeah.
This is our department mission. It was created some years ago, and we are revisiting it right now. So to recap, closure. The strongest components we feel of our program are the junior student teaching experience. Open to critiquing and to changing and to tweaking, but we feel that the core of it is strong. Contemporary ensembles and music education, that contemporary ensembles class we feel is very strong, and it's helping opening up their minds to new ways of music teaching and learning. Our introductory sequence for the first 2 years is one of our strengths. The model in which we deliver secondary instruments is good. We are discussing right now the role of the TAs, because sometimes we have TAs that are just off the charts great, offer them a job, you know, full professor right now teaching in music education. Sometimes it's a disaster.
And so they're here to study performance, and the secondary class is not.
Yeah. And the variability is just wild. So we're trying to address that.
It's not my fault.
No, it's not.
Les
it's not
is a saint, by the way. Yeah. How often he works with us on this.
Yeah. You think about it. I mean, you're 23 years old. You just got out of undergrad last year with a trombone performance degree or whatever, and you've never taught kids. Well, how are you going to teach undergrads to teach kids? That's and sometimes we have people that can come in and just do a great job. Other times it's a disaster. So we're talking about changing that model, maybe getting faculty to work closer in that model. And then rehearsal lab, we feel very good about our rehearsal lab model. You know, the challenge with this, getting faculty in there, is obviously load. So areas that need attention. We need more emphasis on playing without notation and using technology. Just because our students come and they're pretty good at that. They do that. That's what they know. And we want to get them outside of that comfort zone so that they can dip into that other 80% in school music. Need more multicultural content. It's a big world. Any student should be able to specialize in general music. Right now, our students are tracked. If I'm a trumpet player, I've got this track and I can't deviate. And many of us would like to see that change, because general music is so important. Too many one credit classes. You know, we one credit our students to death, as you know. Mentioned this consistency with the GAs. A philosophical thing that we're trying to figure out right now is breadth versus depth, right? I mean, we're really, our students leave being really good band directors, really good chorus teachers, really good strings teachers. The breadth, that maybe not so much. Maybe we are tracking them too much. Maybe we are specializing them too much at the expense of breadth.
Wow, I have to formulate this. In all y'all's experience, In your experience, do our students, if they have depth, is the field changing such that they really need more breadth and the depth is less important, or do they need both?
Two things I would say. Yeah. One is it is changing. Not dramatically, but it is changing. It's very different than it was even 10 years ago. The second response that I would have to that is, even if it's not, I think our job is to prepare them not to just teach next year, but to teach 20 years from now. And so that's what we're trying to do.
And also, when they get a degree, New York State certifies them to be able to teach
K through 12 music.
Yeah. So potentially, particularly in the small community, you may be a band director, but you're also going to be teaching general music and chorus and strings. Mm-hmm. So that's, and I think sometimes we overlook that they are getting K through 12 music degree.
I wanted to ask you about the junior year, because that's a crunch point, and thinking about where curriculum might change and how to make things less stressful for students. What I'm hearing from you is that this is sort of mandated by the state, that it's difficult to get all the state requirements before they can go in front of students within 2 years, right? And that's what needs to happen.
Much of it is.
Right, but by the junior year. And then, there's no, it doesn't sound like there's wiggle room here.
We don't,
to, like, make that junior year.
There is one of our hardest things. There's very little. By the time you line up all of the state requirements and Ithaca College, because of all the changes that we've been having, we have some, but it's very difficult. There's a lot of things that the where they land is where they land, and but we can change some of the peripheral around there, and that's what we're trying to look at.
All right.
We might be able to do some shuffling with junior and senior student teaching, you know, depending on how that plays out. We may be able to do some shuffling with the secondary instrument classes, you know. Part of the problem is
but
what...
But each one of those things you're saying is the excellence of the program.
I know. That's part of the problem. It's either mandated by the state or it's something that we feel we do really well. And so we got to figure, all right, how do we balance that?
Mark.
I just had a question. It seems to me that this whole program is really dependent upon the health and viability of Immaculate Conception, and that if Immaculate Conception were to go under, we would really be screwed. Is that
not
correct
necessarily
perception?
So. We would just have to find other ways of delivering what we deliver.
Another partnership.
We also, I should have mentioned too, we do have some students, not very many, but who go into the public school, like BJM. We have a couple students over there. So.
Well, all of the band students and all of the string students go into the public schools. It's just the vocal track that goes to Immaculate.
And you're right. I mean, when I first got here, they had a robust program K through 8. In the 7th, 8th grades, you know, they can't compete with the public schools. Because, you know, it's a Catholic school and not a whole lot of technology. But there seems to me that the younger grades are very strong.
And that's been a question. Some people say, why do we drive to Cortland? You know, and my response is because it's a fantastic program. And if we don't, first off, you have to have a tenured teacher, right? We don't have any string teachers in Ithaca that are tenured at the elementary level that we would put with a student. We have to have someone to read their lesson plan, someone to be willing to go over all of this. So we can change, and we have changed. But yeah, we are very fortunate where we're at right now, and it's tough when we do make changes. There's a lot of cards that have to fall just right.
Do you guys end at 50 or at the hour?
Actually, 5-0.
Yeah.
That's all we have, this last slide.
Do you have any feedback from your graduates in, you know, the last X number of years regarding, for example, the breadth versus depth question, you know, whether they are really using the full depth of their repertoire knowledge in teaching strings, or are they caught off guard and say, geez, I never learned how to handle a group of kids who listen to hip-hop or something like that?
Yeah, we are getting that.
Well, we do have seminars, too, where the students come in and they talk about their experience, and oftentimes we'll get, I had to do a contemporary class and I didn't know how to do this, or I had to do a jazz band, mm-hmm. or I need to do marching band. So we do get a little bit of that.
Thank you very much.
We'll send this out to you.
That'd be great.
Cool.
Thanks a lot.
Feel free to email with any questions that we didn't get to.